Hey, Harpy Hour fans. There's a new way to earn yourselves a coveted Harpy Hour logo sticker and get a shout out from us in an episode.
Just tag us at Harpy Hour Pod on an original social media post. So not a retweet, but something you wrote yourself telling your friends how much you love us.
Next, DM us your mailing address straight from your social media account or email us along with a screenshot of your post to harpyhourpodcast@gmail.com.
You won't get another sticker if you already got one in our last giveaway, but let your friends know anyways so they can participate and get a matching sticker.
We're only giving away up to 20 stickers, but if you miss out, you can also get one by supporting us on Patreon.
Now, before you enjoy the episode, check out this promo from another awesome podcast to add to your list and stick around for Harpy Hour.
Hello, one and all, to the Insanely Dangerous Retro Pod Show.
Hello, who's this?
Just don't hurt the kids, okay?
It goes, bleh.
Who would win in a steel cage match between Andy Crane, Andy Peters versus Neil Buchanan and Tommy Boyd?
Sounds like a scratchy robot chicken.
12-inch BA Baracas dolls that
you didn't really go with a 12-incher.
Here we go.
If that worked how I think it's going to work, it's going to be bang average.
Oh, I'm just over it now.
Harpy Hour may contain explicit language, as well as graphic, violent, and sexual content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Harpy Hour,
the harpiest of all the hours.
Beautiful.
We are the Harpies.
I'm Tracy.
I'm Liz.
I'm Steph.
And this might be our podcast where we share ridiculous stories in history, science, and entertainment.
Entertainment, maybe?
Unconfirmed?
Who are you? What are we doing?
We don't know.
Where am I? What day is it?
71 episodes in.
Oh, I never know what day it is, actually. It's Cinco de Mayo.
Oh,
we're recording this on Cinco de Mayo.
Today is the anniversary of my senior prom, which I only remember because it's on Cinco de Mayo, and we had a debate on the way there about Cinco de Mayo, and it's the anniversary of the Battle of Puebla, not Mexican Independence Day. You're welcome.
Thank you for that. Congratulations on the prom anniversary.
Thank you. See, I don't think that changes you. The way that I celebrate.
Yes, this added almost nothing to my life, but thank you.
Okay. Oh, super rude. 15 years ago today, I was in a big frilly dress.
Proms were so long ago.
I was in a big frilly dress, and I'm going to be in a big frilly dress again soon.
My prom dress was like bright orange, and it had like beads all over it, and it kind of was really low in the back. I'm surprised my dad let me wear it.
Oh, God. Mine was blue, and I bought it in Boulder, Colorado.
Oh.
Why?
Yeah,
because that I was touring Boulder's campus. I almost went there.
Oh, and you just happened to see a dress there?
Yeah, like we went into, you know, that like pedestrian shopping plaza.
Oh, yeah.
In Boulder,
yeah.
And, you know, like we just popped into this like cute little boutique, and I found a dress and decided to buy it and bring it home for my prom.
Nice.
Mine was pink and had different tiers. It was really cute.
That sounds right.
I think we should all post photos of our prom.
Oh my god!
This episode.
We should. Oh wow.
I think the craziest thing about looking back on those pictures is how tiny I was.
I know.
Why was I so small?
I remember I went, like I found like a picture of a hairstyle that I really liked, and I thought it was like kind of cool and funky and different. And then I went to the hairdresser, and whatever the fuck she put on my head was like, it was awful. Like,
I was in tears.
I'm like, what did you do to my head? This looks horrendous. It was just like a bunch of like loops, like little, I don't know, like a bunch of like loops on top of my head, like little nipples. I don't even know. It was really bad. And I was like crying, and I'm like, I don't like it. And she's like, well, I don't have time to do it again. So like she sent me out like that, and I think my mom paid for it. And then we like went home and tried to like play with it. And then my mom just like rushed me to some other hairstylist, like just found some other random one that was open and be like, please fix this. And so they just like took the whole thing down and just like threw something together. I was like, I don't care what you do at this point. Just like make it look
just
good.
Not this.
Just not this. I wish I had a picture. Yeah. I don't think I took a picture of it. So she just like redid.
Probably because
like,
you were something. So scarred.
I was crying. I was like, this is terrible. But she redid it and it looked like it was fine. But I just remember this like that trauma and panic right before prom. Yeah. Like everything is ruined.
Oh, God.
Everything is awful.
Everything is awful. One of the last girls ready for prom. And I was hosting everybody like at my house. Like our limo bus was coming to my place.
The first part doesn't sound like you, but the second part does.
Well, I was trying to multitask because I had also just started my summer job that week. And like, so I was supposed to be doing my trainings for work. And so like, I tried to like squeeze in, like I negotiated some time off at the end of the day. So like, oh, our proms were on a Monday.
What? Why?
Wait, it was like a thing for seniors because we were out of school by that point. Like it was the time in between classes were over and before we had our graduation.
Oh.
So like we weren't in classes anymore, but juniors were. And so it was kind of this whole like, there were multiple reasons. One, it's our venue was cheaper on Mondays because we did it at the Copley Plaza Hotel in Boston. So like we had, if we wanted to keep our really, really fancy venues, we had to do a cheap Monday event. But also being on a school night, like, prevented the amount of, like, juniors. Like, I think juniors, if they tried to call in sick on Tuesday, like, their absences were not excused. It was like, no.
Oh, really?
We know you're at prom.
We're on to you.
So, yeah, they were Monday proms. But, yeah, so I had to work Monday. And so I just took, like, a couple hours off at the very end of the day. Like, I need to leave early. It's my prom. And so, like, rushed to my appointment to get my hair done like took longer than we anticipated. And so I'm still like in the salon getting my hair done. All of my friends are showing up at my house. I'm not there. Like I'm almost there.
That is so unlike you to be late.
I was trying to do too much.
Anyway, Liz.
Yeah.
What you harping on today?
Might as well jump, jump,
jump.
Might as well jump.
Jump, 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 jump.
Go ahead and jump, jump.
No, you're saying the wrong jump song.
Jump, jump.
No, she's just saying jump over and over again.
I'm playing all the notes. I'm singing all the notes.
I don't know either jump song.
Jump, 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 jump.
Okay, I'm following. You are right.
I know I'm right.
I actually watched that music video earlier today. And
the Glee version?
No, the original Van Halen music video.
I mean,
video
that's good too, but I like
it. And it is quite hysterical.
No, I have to watch that.
That frontman is pretty flexible.
Ooh, I like it.
There's a lot of jump kicks, some great hair, some great outfits.
Love me a flexible man.
Samesies.
Guess when we're starting this segment?
The 1800s!
Yes.
Yay!
We're not going to stay there for long. We're just setting ourselves up. 1865, Mark Twain publishes a short story. It goes by several different names. I think it was originally published as The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County, but it's also known as Jim Smiley and His Jumping Frog, and it even has like a few other shorter names. But regardless, Mark Twain at the time was like 29 years old, jobless, in debt. His name didn't mean anybody to anybody yet. Like he was just still a struggling writer.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a millennial.
We've come so far.
I mean, have we?
So he wrote this while he was at a camp in Angels Camp, which is a real place in Calaveras County, California. And so that's also where the story takes place.
Okay.
The story tells the tale of a gambler named Jim Smiley. So Jim Smiley was known to gamble on horse races and dog fights, but he was also just like a betting man. Like, I bet you I could do this better than you could. Like, any opportunity to just like bet somebody on a challenge that he invented, he would do it.
So he's a gambling addiction.
Yeah. One day he catches a frog and he names it Daniel Webster.
Yes. Why wouldn't you?
Yes.
Obviously.
And he spends 3 months training it to jump. I would assume that the frog already knows how to jump.
I was going
to
say, jump on training cue. Does it need?
I'm assuming jump on cue or jump through hoops or something.
Yes. I think it's training it to jump further, like to jump better, or also like to jump on command.
Okay.
I don't know the details, but he spends 3 months working with this frog.
Okay.
And then one day, a stranger visits. So again, they're in Angel's Camp, which is like a gold mining camp in Calaveras County. So like a stranger rolls into town and Jim bets him $40 that his frog, Daniel Webster, can outjump any other frog in the county.
Okay. And well, he spent 3 months training it.
And the stranger is like, oh, like, interesting bet, but I don't have like a frog to challenge you with.
That's
and
fair.
Jim's like, oh, I'll go catch one for you.
Like, who would take up this bet? I mean, like, this guy's saying this, clearly he knows something, like there's a trick to it. I'm just going to get a random frog and try it out. No, you're going to lose your money.
Yeah.
Don't be dumb.
If someone's betting me like my frog will do better than yours, or like my dog can shit bigger shits than yours, like clearly you know something about your animal that I don't.
This is loaded.
Loaded.
It's rigged.
Loaded with shits like and jumps.
1800s gold mining California. They don't have a lot of entertainment. There's probably just a lot of men out there boozing and gambling.
So this sounds like a quarantine effort.
They made all the sourdough already, so.
Yeah.
Now we're on to frog jumping.
So it sounds like you think like Jim has the upper hand. It's suspicious. Like, he's so confident. I think my frog can out.
Yes, I agree.
Out jump your frog. Mm-hmm. So he's like, okay, I'll go get you a frog to jump. And he leaves behind Daniel Webster while he goes to catch this other frog. So while he's out,
this is a
the
trick.
Stranger feeds the frog lead pellets.
Oh, poor froggy. Poor Daniel Webster.
Lead shot as they carried around.
Why would Daniel Webster eat that?
I don't know.
Daniel Webster's hungry. Don't judge him.
He's been training really hard.
Yeah. I mean, I would. Yeah. Okay.
You would eat the pellets. Is that what you're about to say?
If I were a fucking frog, I probably wouldn't know. They probably look like food pellets.
If I hadn't seen it before, who knows?
Yeah, I would be like, oh, this
looks... I mean, frogs will just go around eating random things, being like, is this food? Like,
yeah, but Daniel Webster's been living among the humans, so he's probably been hand-fed before and trusts these humans.
I would assume he would try it and be like, gross, I don't want this.
Well, maybe he ate one lead pellet.
Well, to be fair...
To be fair...
I didn't read the original story. Like, I didn't read the actual story, just a recounting of it. I think one of the versions or summaries is that, like, the stranger poured lead shot down his throat, which is
aggressive.
Yeah, it's a little animal abusey.
This guy wants to win. He's in it to win it.
Yeah. Jim comes back. He's like, I got you this frog. They place them down, and the stranger's frog is like, jump, jump, jump. And
jump, jump, jump.
Daniel Webster doesn't do anything. He doesn't go anywhere.
He's full of lead. Of course he doesn't do anything.
Yeah. But Jim doesn't know that yet. And he's just like, oh my God, I can't fucking believe it. I just lost $40 to this stranger.
And 3 months of my life.
And my frog's dead.
Yeah. Like, this is a really, like, downer day for our hero. Yeah.
So the stranger leaves with his winnings, and then when Jim goes to pick up his frog, he notices that it's a lot heavier than the last time he picked him up. Mm-hmm. And that's when the frog just, like, belches out little lead shot pellets, and he's like, God damn, I've been had. And so he, like, runs out of the bar or wherever they were hanging out, and the stranger's gone. He
definitely a bar. No one's doing this sober. Yeah. Definitely a bar.
Yeah. And so that is the short story of Jim Smiley and his jumping frog.
It makes me think of Practical Magic, where the frog belches out the guy's ring.
Yeah.
He's like, that's his party trick.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy Angelov.
Also a Jim.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. So many connections.
Yep.
Cut forward to 1928.
The frog is not alive anymore.
Correct. One can only assume. 1928, local residents of Angels Camp, California, got their very first paved road. Yay!
Oh, hooray! Woo!
And obviously, this is an event that warrants a celebration.
Okay.
So they celebrate the first paved road by holding a, like, town-wide frog jumping contest. And this was in honor of their personal connections with Mr. Twain, because Mark Twain had spent a lot of time in their town in years past. So they felt inspired to honor Mark Twain and his connection to Angels Camp by having a frog jumping contest that, you know, to reflect the story that he wrote.
Sure.
But without the lead shot in the frog.
Without poisoning animals.
Yeah. So this becomes an annual event. And after a couple of years, the frog jumping contest gets rolled into the county fair. So the Calaveras County Fair had been around since 1893. So that had already been going on for a long time. And then they combined the fair and the contest. And now we have the Calaveras County Fair and Jumping Frog Jubilee.
Jumping Frog Jubilee.
But the frog jumping is what brings in the crowds.
I mean, it's a crowd pleaser.
I mean, what else are you going for? Yeah.
In recent history, average attendance can be between 30,000 to 50,000 visitors.
For the frogs?
Yep, throughout the four-day weekend.
Pourquoi
pas? Pourquoi? Pourquoi pas?
Pourquoi pas?
Just wait, that's just the attendance to the frog part, or is the attendance to the whole fair?
To the whole fair, I believe. Okay.
Yeah, but the frogs are the headliners.
Yeah, exactly. The frogs put the county fair on the map.
I did not come across the frogs during my county fair segment.
Yeah, I had this on my list for a while, and including when you did the county fair segment, and I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to actually like do the notes for my frog jumping.
Trying to one-up me.
Mm-hmm. Mean, it is. Per use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the County Fair and Frog Jumping Jubilee is held, or the Jumping Frog Jubilee, gotta get mm-hmm. it right, is held the third weekend in May every year.
Oh, it's coming up.
Yep.
I'm so excited.
As of the time of this recording.
Yes.
And the fairgrounds themselves are also known as Frogtown.
Nice.
Which is also like the name of the website that they use. So the website for the fair and jubilee is frogtown.com. And the
Jesus Christ.
The jubilee, the jump contest, takes place on the main stage. There's also a smaller stage, which is called the lily pad stage. And that's for jumping frogs without the pressure of competition. So it's where you can like practice with your frogs, or where people who like don't
without
want to
the
compete.
Pressure of competition.
Yeah.
No performance anxiety in that section.
They're just jumping for joy, jumping for yep. fun.
For the love of the jump.
For the love of the jump.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be like where maybe kids try jumping, or people kind of like warm up before going on to the main stage.
Okay.
But some people discourage pad. Warming up, and we'll get to it.
Oh. Wear out your frog.
There's a strategy.
Yeah. But contestants of all ages are welcome to participate in the competition. And it's worth noting also that this is an international competition.
Oh.
Where professional Ooh. Frog teams from around the world travel to Calaveras County to compete their frogs.
There are professional frog jumpers.
Yep.
Don't be a hater, Steph. God.
It's just a whole other world that I didn't know existed.
Frog jockeys, Steph.
How does one get into frog jockeying?
Probably the same way you get into pig calling.
I have a couple of family examples that I'll get
into. Et tu, Brute.
So some requirements for jumping your frog. There's conditions for the frog itself. It must be at least 4 inches from nose to tail. So, like, making sure that you have, like, an adult frog and not a juvenile.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't want child labor involved in this. So.
No. Mm-hmm. But you would want a bigger frog, wouldn't you? Like, for the jumping?
Probably.
Smaller frog wouldn't jump as high.
It has smaller legs.
Or as far. Yeah. So, that's a flawed... There's no advantage to that. God.
Unless, like, the youthful legs can jump more.
I think, yeah, it would be... It would not be effective for jumping, but I think the policy is in place more so for, like, the frog's protection. You just don't want to use... like immature frogs,
child labor,
for environmental ecological reasons. You can only jump each frog once, so you can submit like as many frogs as you'd like, and you can, you know, come in with actually a maximum of 20 frogs if you're willing to pay. It's $5 per frog that you jump.
What is the prize?
I'll get to that.
Okay,
wait on a moment.
Hold your frogs.
Hold my frogs.
So you can't jump any frog more than once in the competition. Evidence of jumping the same frog twice will result in a disqualification.
Sure.
Each frog only gets one chance, so your frog either hops or flops.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sounds like a terrible dating show.
Hop or flop.
Hop or flop on MTV. Yeah.
So the frog, when it's placed, it has 1 minute to make its jumps. So basically, like, if your frog is not feeling it and doesn't jump in that 1 minute,
it's performance anxiety.
It. Yep. That was your chance with that frog.
Oh, stage fright.
Poor babies. Poor tadpoles.
Nobody's jumping tadpoles.
The jump begins when all 4 of the frog's feet, including its toes, are placed onto the launch pad. The launch pad does not launch the frog.
Sure.
It's the pad from which the frog launches itself.
Okay.
Fair. So it's just this little pad on the main stage. And so as soon as you place your frog onto that pad, the clock starts. Like I said, it has 1 minute to make its jumps. And the total jumps that qualify are 3 jumps.
I thought I only got 1 jump.
Well, it gets 3 consecutive jumps. It only gets 1 chance.
Okay.
To perform, to compete.
Okay.
But okay. The actual competition, the challenge, is determined by how far the frog goes in 3 jumps. So you place the frog on the pad, it makes 3 jumps, and then you measure the distance from where it began to where it ended.
Oh, in my head, this was like a height thing. This is a distance jump.
No, it's distance.
It's distance.
Okay.
It's going for distance.
So 3 consecutive jumps, the farthest frog wins. Got it.
Yes. But it's important to note that it's the net difference from where the frog began and ended. So right. If the frog jumps in a circle, it could be a huge fucking circle. But if it like starts back, or if it ends back where it started, then it basically didn't travel anywhere.
Oh, so it's got to be you want it to jump in a line.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. So like if that's, you want it to have distance, but you want it to be straight distance. So if the frog zigzags, like it jumps one way and then its next jump is in the other direction, it's not making as many like inches in terms of distance. Yeah,
so the frog that lands farthest from where it started is the winner.
Right. Right. After the 3 jumps.
Gotcha.
So it's not adding up each individual jump.
Gotcha.
And then making a total. It's just like, where did the frog land after its 3rd jump? And then just measuring that distance to the lily pad.
Gotcha.
Okay. So yes, getting your frog to jump straight is very critical. Contestants can bring their own frog, or they can use one of the local California bullfrogs that are collected and housed at the Frog Spa by the county fair.
So you can just like rent a frog for the day.
Yeah.
So that's like betting on horses. Like you don't own the horse. Yeah. You know nothing about this horse. Mm-hmm. You're just like, I'm gonna go with this one.
Yeah.
I guess maybe you know something about the horse. Do they have stats like the horses do?
I don't believe so. I think there's like a not a kitschy, but like it attracts a lot of people that aren't really local and wouldn't like, they don't seriously want to win. They just like want to participate in this quirky famous fair event.
They just want to be included.
Yeah. And so it's just like,
they're just happy to be there.
Pay $5, get a frog, go up onto the stage and just like see what happens.
Okay.
And it's just fun to participate. So they keep a frog spa so that like people who are traveling or whatever can just like borrow a frog and participate and say they were involved.
Necessarily BYOF.
No.
The frog spa is an optimal environment for the frogs where they listen to classical music.
Oh,
I love it. Do they have headphones? I want to believe they have headphones.
You can get a tour of the frog spa as well if you're visiting the fair.
I love it.
At least they're treated well.
Oh, they're well maintained.
Living it up in the frog spa.
So this is an option, as I mentioned, but most locals or professional teams or people who take it very seriously do typically bring their own frog. In recent history, a rented frog did win in 2015. So that was just like pretty lucky whoever walked up and selected.
Yeah, I was going to say, imagine if you are training your frog for like months and someone just picks up because comes here and is like, I'll take that one. And then that one wins. You're like, motherfucker, I just wasted my like months. I wasted months of my life. What am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm questioning everything.
So most serious people bring their own frog.
Serious.
And a typical year includes up
to
4,000 frog entries.
Oof. All in one single competition.
But again, I mentioned briefly earlier, it's a 4-day weekend.
Right.
So it's a, you know, a series of events that go.
But what I mean is like it's all one contest. It's not like frogs of this, like there's not like size classes or like age classes or anything like that.
Right.
It's just one giant competition. So like only one frog wins the
4,000 down to one.
Gotcha.
That's a lot of frogs.
It's a lot of stiff competition.
Now, Jim Smiley spent 3 months training Daniel Webster. And that's actually not recommended by most frog jockeys.
Frog jockeys. I'm obsessed with this.
Most professionals believe that frogs cannot be trained. The jockey is trained.
Go on.
Okay.
So frog jockeys must learn what the frog needs to be able to go the distance.
I can go the distance.
So it's really the jockey that's trying to figure out like what commands the frog responds to, or, you know, just like what conditions are most favorable to your particular frog.
But how are you going to know that if you're just renting a frog for the day?
These are the professional ones.
Chance. Oh, yeah, okay. That's right. Just luck.
Okay.
But there are some recommendations, secrets to the frog jump, if you will.
Okay.
One is to not handle the frogs too much. So frogs should be kept as wild as possible. This preserves their powerful natural instinct for self-preservation, so that they are actually like scared of you and will jump. Oh. So the more you handle them and the more comfortable they get being handled and in the presence of people, they're actually less likely to jump.
They get complacent.
Yeah.
You want them to have the fight or flight.
Exactly. Yeah. They can't be too tame.
You want to put them down on the pad and them to jump as far away from you as possible. Like, get the fuck away from this guy.
You are a predator.
Temperature is also a very important condition for like storing your frog.
Storing.
Oh.
Care and keeping of your frog.
I feel that very strongly because temperature is a big part of the care and keeping of Tracy as well. So.
Same.
So Brown University was actually doing a study about like frog jumping, and they couldn't get their frogs to jump as far as they do at the competitions in Calaveras County. And they're like, I don't understand. Like at the frog jump jubilee,
these
frogs go so far, but we're trying to get like the same species of bullfrogs to jump in our lab, and they're not jumping as far. And they finally determined that it's because their lab was too cold. And so you need to have a certain temperature, a warm environment to keep their frog muscles limber.
Yeah, not too hot, not too cold.
Mm-hmm.
When you're too cold, you just want to cuddle into a ball and just shiver.
I get it. Yeah. I get it. Same.
Mm-hmm. You can't keep your Stephanie too cold either. Mm-mm. Doesn't like it.
How you place your frog is also really important. So if you watch videos, a lot of jockeys lightly drop their frog. So like instead of just like placing them down onto the launch pad. They kind of like hover them a little bit over the pad and let go. I didn't read a lot about what advantage that has, but I think it kind of like puts them in a more natural position and makes them like reactive. So they land and then want to jump right away.
Mm-hmm. Well, it might also be part of like the fight or flight thing. I'm just speculating, like if you drop them versus if you just place them gently, like they're maybe a little bit more like on edge or something, or excitable.
Yeah, like startled.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That was one tip that like was not really further explained, but It was online and you can see it in videos too, that they kind of just like lightly drop their frog onto the pad. Then finally, you position yourself in such a way as to keep the frog jumping in a straight line. So you kind of like use your body to influence where it goes. So hopefully straight away, like it goes straight. But if it jumps at an angle, then you like use your body to kind of redirect it. Like you can't touch the frog after you put it on the launch pad, but you can, you know, if it makes its first jump and it goes off in like, you know, a not straight direction, you can orient yourself around the frog to hopefully like keep it on a straight path.
How big is this launch pad?
It's 8 inches.
Okay. It's pretty small.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, it's just a little bit bigger than the frog itself.
Gotcha.
So once the frog is placed on the launch pad, the jockey can do any number of things to get the frog to jump. This can include singing, leaping, dancing, whistling, stomping, yelling, or blowing on the frog to get it to jump.
Anything but touching.
This is where your previous experience training with the frog comes in. It's the training is an opportunity for you to figure out which of all of those things your frog actually responds to.
Singing. Sure. Sing to your frog.
Screaming at it.
The most common that I've seen is just standing right behind the frog and stomping, but a lot of like hand slapping. So just like you kind of come down into a crouching position and like slap your hands on the ground and like yell or blow on the frog. And I think that's like maybe like the most startling thing that gets them.
Can you put your hands like near the frog, like around its body to kind of scare it? Like, can you clap over top of it or just kind of hover your hands around it?
I think you can. Yeah. Yeah. I think you just can't touch it.
Okay.
But I think, I mean, there might be some like more detailed specifics, because I've seen some people like get very, very close because like they're blowing on the frog. So like they're getting really close, so like yelling in its ear. Or like I said, like a lot of people kind of just like clap or slam the ground next to the launch pad. I think that helps because you come down kind of on either side of it, and that will prompt it to hopefully go straight.
We need to post videos of this for Fun Times Fridays after this episode airs.
Well, I will have a great recommendation for you later on. So those are tips and recommendations for like maximizing your frog jump. There's also a frog jump welfare policy, because the Calaveras County and Jumping Frog Jubilee takes frog welfare very seriously.
Sure. I mean, that's important.
So they want you to catch your frogs from the wild. So like not like go to the pet store and buy a frog just to like enter into this competition. Mm-hmm. So catch a wild frog. They recommend using nets for their safety. Care should be taken to avoid capturing female frogs carrying eggs. And again, there, as I already mentioned, there was a size requirement of 4 inches. So they don't want you to use like young baby frogs.
No babies.
There are recommendations for the frog's diet. So primarily insects, as well as proper handling of your frog. Specifically, don't shake or squeeze your frog.
Shaken frog syndrome is a real thing. Sorry.
The feeding or injecting of any unnatural, inappropriate, or harmful objects to frogs for any reason is strictly prohibited.
Strictly.
They also then specifically reference the lead shot in Mark Twain's story. Don't give your frog a lead shot.
That's a real specific example. Like,
don't feed your frog lead. Also, that's not good for the competition. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah. Not good for the competition, not good for the froggy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
There's also no foreign substances allowed in the water. frog performance enhancers?
What? Oh my god, I'm so excited. They're in roid rage. This is my new favorite thing.
No doping your frogs.
They can't compete in the Olympics if they're doping.
Mm-mm.
Frogs should also be transported and housed in a humane and safe manner, so they should be allowed to rest, and they should not be jumped more than 3 times in 1 day. So like if you arrive at the fairgrounds and you want to use the lily pad to practice, you basically can only do so twice, because then the third
time is the competition. Time
is for the competition. Yeah. So you can't overwork your frog.
That's fair.
Frog labor laws.
They need a weekend too.
They have a policy for when a frog escapes during a public event.
Oh, no. This makes me think of Harry Potter.
I feel like that needs
this is Harry
to,
Potter.
Yeah, it's
and
gotta happen a lot.
Neville looking for his toad all the time.
Yeah.
There needs to be a policy. Code green over the announcements. Everyone locks down.
Every effort should be made to recapture the frog without harming it and to avoid the frog from reaching a harmful or inappropriate environment. So, like, you don't want it to, like, jump into a
sewer
fryer at the corn dog stand.
For many reasons.
Yeah. The emergency response plan should identify an individual who is responsible for the welfare of frogs in the event of an emergency or disaster.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
As well as an evacuation plan, including who will evacuate the frogs, how they will be transported, and where the frogs will be taken if an emergency or disaster were to occur.
I'm getting so anxious about this.
They think of everything.
I know. I'm like, do other events that involve animals have plans like this? Like,
they must.
I think absolutely. Because this policy is not just, it's not just like, oh, this is the Calaveras County Fair policy. This has like Fish and Wildlife Service policy.
Huh. It's just not something I would have thought of. Like, does every county fair that has any kind of animals there have like a plan in place for like, if an emergency happens, this is what we do?
I don't know, but it should. I would think that it would.
But I also like wonder, like, who knows this plan?
I mean,
like, do all the contestants know this plan? Or is it like if something happens, it's going to be like one guy shouting,
not.
Like, do this, do this.
I feel like it's like air traffic control or like the stewardess on a flight, you know?
Yeah. I feel like if I went to this county fair and paid $5 to rent a frog and jump it, nobody would tell me the evacuation plan.
No.
Right.
Like, I think it's just
in the moment, somebody who knows
somebody
something will
swoops
shout
in and grabs all the frogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so it makes me think of like, you know, like one of my hospitals that I worked at, we had like a protocol of like, if the computer system goes down, like, this is what we're supposed to do. And there are people who know it. But then like in the moment when the computer shuts down, I don't know it. Everyone else that's working doesn't know it. There's like a select number of people who know it, and they're trying to explain it to us in the moment when the computers are down and the ER is in chaos. And I'm like, this is insane. Like this should be known and prepared for much better than this kind of thing. Mm. So I'm just picturing it being like one person on a loudspeaker just shouting where everyone should go, and like it's chaos because there's an emergency.
I mean, I think if you're evacuating the frogs, it's always an emergency, regardless of how many people know the plan.
You also cannot use any frogs that are listed on the endangered species list.
Oh, that makes
they're
sense.
All one type of frog. Yeah.
I mean, it's traditional or most common to use a bullfrog, but I mean, you technically could use any other frog of your choice as long as it's not endangered.
Gotcha. Okay.
There's also a death clause.
Oh, no.
If a frog dies or is killed, it must be destroyed as soon as possible.
What? Why?
And may not be eaten or otherwise used for any purpose.
Why?
But
why does it have to be destroyed?
I don't know. And I don't know. What does destroy mean?
I don't know.
Like
burned?
Yeah.
Buried?
I guess burned. I don't know. Oh, I'm so sad.
But the point, you're not supposed to eat it. Don't burn it on a grill. And then put it on a stick.
Did any frogs ever die?
I'm so sad.
There's no death toll for the jumping frog jubilee.
Oh my god, because it's not very jubilant.
I feel like they should be a death toll. I feel like these frogs should know the risks.
I'm just hoping that there hasn't been a death.
If we don't know about it, it hasn't happened.
We have a death clause.
We have a death clause.
If it hasn't
None
happened.
None of us have died.
If we don't know about it, it hasn't happened. Carry on.
I think it's just, I'm sure they also have not had to evacuate for an emergency or a disaster.
Well, that one I want to know about. That one's hilarious.
All right, so those are all the conditions for obtaining your frog, how to best train your jockey to compete with your frog.
Okay.
Now, if you are lucky enough to win out of the 4,000 entered frogs,
someone's gotta win.
Yeah, a cash prize.
What's the prize?
Ooh.
So the prize is, if you just for winning that year's fair, mm-hmm. I found two different values for this. It's either $700 or $750.
Okay.
Is your prize for winning the year.
Mm.
But if you beat the record, so you know the record's not necessarily broken every single year.
Okay.
If you beat the existing record, and I will get to that later, you get $5,000.
Oh,
wow.
That's pretty nice.
This is a lucrative
yeah.
But there's setup. 4,000 frogs. Yeah. At $5 a frog, it's like 20 grand. So like 750. These people are making bank running this frog thing.
Well, they're also running a whole fucking fair.
Yeah. There's a lot of upkeep on these fucking frogs, I imagine.
That frog spa ain't cheap.
No.
The frog spa.
I love it's the true. Frog spa.
I hope they put a lot of money into that frog spa.
Along with the $5,000, you get international media attention.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's why all of us have heard about this and can name mm-hmm. all of the record yep. winners.
And probably what a little bit of that money the fair collects goes to is a handsome brass plaque commemorating your win. And this is embedded in historic downtown Angels Camp's Frog Hop of Fame, which is sure. like the Hollywood Aww. Walk of Fame. You just get a little plaque on the sidewalk.
Yep. Seems reasonable.
And it comes engraved with your name, the name of the frog you jumped, the year you won, and the distance your frog jumped. So it has Excellent. All your stats.
Excellent.
Does the frog get to like put its little paw prints or footprints in concrete?
That would be so cute.
Not like the Walk of Fame. It's not the Hollywood Walk of Fame here. Jesus.
That's what she was relating it to.
I mean, it's what I compared it to. But, yeah.
but I mean,
that's why I asked.
It doesn't have hand or footprints. It has all of their stats.
No.
They put a lot of information on this thing.
So there are stats.
Yes.
You could research ahead of time if you're going to pick a rental frog.
No, I mean the stats of the winning frog.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if the winning frog is a rental frog, you'd be able to try to pick that frog, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know if they label them.
Yeah, it doesn't well, seem actually, like
and
it.
They might not ever have the same frog again.
Right.
Oh. Do they let him go after
we'll
this?
We'll get to that. Yeah, so
oh, okay.
I learned about this from watching the Netflix series We Are the Champions, which is also how I discovered the historic football in Florence.
Okay.
How do you say that name? How do you say that game?
Calcio
nope.
Historico.
Nope.
Calcio.
Calcio.
Calcio. Calcio Historico.
Yep, that's exactly correct. That's 100% correct.
Le Festival de Con.
Okay. All right. This is painful.
Pourquoi pas?
Pourquoi
Coming from
pas?
You, Tracy.
Pourquoi pas?
All right. So
Pourquoi
Netflix
pas?
Did an episode for this series about the frog jubilee.
Nice.
And it was filmed in 2019 at their May fair that year.
Okay.
It was canceled for 2020 because
of
obviously.
Course.
I mean, because
everything's
everything fucking
was.
Canceled in 2020.
It is back this year, and their like theme or their slogan for 2021 is quote back in the saddle for 2021. Because it's
it.
A county fair, so they also do, you know, like rodeo
saddle
stuff or whatever.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, do the frogs wear little saddles?
I wish. That would be amazing.
For the frog jockeys.
Oh my
obviously.
God.
So the Netflix series kind of documents the background and history of the Jubilee, but it in particular focuses on a select few families.
Okay.
And so there are two rival frog jumping families that have been competing against each other for decades.
Oh, no. Wow. Decades. Mm-hmm.
This is the Kitchell family and the Gustine family.
Who Oh, dear.
The Kitchells started competing. It's an undetermined amount of time, but it was just described as decades ago.
Okay.
Any number of decades, but decades ago, they noticed a lack of local participants, like too many, like just
too many tourists,
enthusiasts or international folks coming in to jump frogs, and it had kind of like started to lose its worst. local culture, local appeal. And so John Kitchell and his girlfriend at the time, it would eventually become his wife, and a few of their friends just were like, you know what, let's go down and we'll compete, you know, we'll get the locals, like we'll be the local representation. Sure. So they gather a few frogs, throw them into an iced cooler with their beers, and they head down to the fairgrounds.
Ice cooler?
Yes.
Supposed to keep your frogs warm.
Well, they didn't know that.
Okay.
They had never jumped a frog before, and maybe decades ago they didn't have a welfare policy. The frogs were okay, but they just did not perform well.
Yeah, because they were too cold.
Yeah. So they show up, the frogs make, you know, fools of themselves. And I doubt
the frogs were ashamed.
Yeah, the frogs probably got out of this all right.
Their pride was intact.
They soon learn, you know, the best conditions, and for several decades they have been improving on their performance.
Mm-hmm.
The Gustine family started 60 years ago. So Gene Gustine and his brother Frank.
Gene Gustine?
Yeah, that's a terrible name.
No.
Started competing 60 years ago. Neither family will reveal exactly where they get their frogs, their family secrets.
Oh boy.
We do know that the Gustine family has been handpicking their frogs from the same river for the entire 60 years their family has been competing. And when the competition is over, they return their chosen frog. So, you know, maybe not necessarily the winning frog because they might not have won, but like their best performing frog will go back to the secret river in hopes that it will breed even better frogs for future years' competitions.
I mean, as long as it breeds with a comparable mate, don't want to fuck up the bloodline.
What about the frogs that are underperforming?
Yeah, I don't know. I assume they just like drop them in a different place.
Like, yeah, because so, you don't want them breeding.
Yeah.
Just put them in a lesser river.
Yeah.
Try to contaminate the gene pool elsewhere.
Yeah.
The Kitchells have a different strategy. They have a number of ponds that they rotate through on a yearly basis so that they don't pick frogs that were like recently used in a jump. So they're trying to just like maximize the amount of time between ponds so that any frogs that had previously been handled for the competition can like be wild again.
Damn.
What is the lifespan of a frog?
Bullfrog?
For the bullfrogs, it's about like 7 to 9 years.
Oh, that's longer than
that's
I would have
reasonable.
Thought.
Yeah. So like you could theoretically, I don't know how many ponds are in their rotation,
right.
But
yeah.
And I don't know how long it takes for a frog to like forget that it jumped in a county fair.
Sure.
But they just like don't want to come back and just pick frogs that have already been handled. Each family has their own techniques. The Gustines run their frogs through an extensive training called Croaker College.
Amazing.
Before they finally settle on the one frog they will rely on to win the competition.
So they only enter one?
Each family member.
Oh, each family member enters one.
But okay. Yeah, I believe so.
Because they can enter up to what, like 20 or something?
Yeah. They collected about 300 frogs from their secret spot, which they narrow down to 80, and then the frogs with the best potential are determined during a training period. The training period is basically just like they kind of mark out these lanes on the street, and then they have all of these labeled bins around the street, and they just like take these 80 frogs and they jump them, and then they sort them by their in the bins by their performance. And like okay. it's very systematic.
Yeah. Damn.
The Kitchells do not reveal their techniques for selecting the perfect frog. Mm-hmm. In fact, one woman, Morgan, who was not always a Kitchell, she married into the family. When she was dating her now husband, she was very explicitly told that she would be in serious trouble if she ever leaked any of the family secrets regarding the frog jumping techniques.
I wouldn't let anyone in until I was like actually married to that person. If I were,
then you can enter the circle of trust.
Yeah. Until you have the marriage certificate, I'm not even going to show you where we get the frogs.
Exactly. If it's that much of a family secret.
So I didn't go that far back in, you know, the history, but just to reflect on a few recent years. In 2017, Justin from the Gustin family took home the title with his frog named Kermit.
Oh, clever.
As I mentioned, this is a family endeavor. So his aunt came in second, his dad came in third, his brother came in fifth, and his grandmother came in seventh.
A little sweep.
The top
family affair.
Yeah. This was particularly notable because it had been 13 years since they last won a title. It had been a drought for them.
Wow.
So this was quite the comeback.
Stuck to it.
Yeah. In 2018, Laura from the Kitchell family won with her frog, Reckless.
Oh.
But despite the rivalry between these two families who typically dominate at the fair, neither family won in 2019.
Oh.
The winner that year was 13-year-old Logan Bush.
Aww.
And his frog, which he named the Webbed One.
Oh.
It jumped 18 feet and 6 inches. His twin sister Madison came in second.
Aww,
with her adorbs. Frog jumping Jack Splash.
They're naturals.
Yeah.
Look at that.
I think that the Netflix producers did not anticipate like these two unknown people coming in for the win. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't really a lot of like background done on them. Like they had spent all of their time with these two competing families and neither of them won.
Yeah. Oops.
Oopsies.
Yep. The record is held by Lee Giudice.
Okay.
Lee set the record back in 1986 with his frog, Rosie the Riveter.
Yeah, bitch.
Go, Rosie.
Yeah, that frog jumped 21 feet, damn, 5¾ inches.
That's so high.
Get it, girl.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
It's noted that conditions have to be perfect to beat the record. So that includes no wind, and the temperature has to be between 85 and 90. It's also notable, like a lot of frog jumpers will point out, that the record has been broken during competition, but just not when it counts during the final jump. So, you know, there's like preliminaries, semifinals, and then finals. So if your frog beats, like, you know,
like
your frog can, yeah, jump more than 21, 5¾ inches. But that's just like for qualifying.
Yeah, that doesn't
for
help you.
The final competition. Yeah, so it's only breaking the record if you know, that distance is accomplished like during official
the competition. Right,
yeah, competitive jump.
Damn, that's rough.
Yep. So it's been a while. Rosie the Riveter still holds the record.
Go, Rosie.
Yeah, girl.
You can do it. You did it.
You did
can
it.
Go
you
the
literally
distance.
Did it. You can listen to Harpy Hour on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen, please rate us and leave us a stunning review.
For a second, I thought we lost Tracy again.
No.
Yeah. I was just trying to come up with something clever.
Debating, and then it didn't happen. So yeah, we just went with it.
Okay.
Well, I'm curious, if you were entering a frog into the Jumping Jubilee, what clever name would you give it? Tell us on social media.
Do it.
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Harpy Hour Pod, and you can email us at harpyhourpodcast@gmail.com.
And we're also on Patreon, so if you want to help us fund frogs to go into this competition,
our money
you need
will
to
not
give
go
us a little
frogs.
Bit of money. It might go to frogs.
Okay. Steph's part is going to
also
be,
travel to Calaveras County, California.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
As well as to the wherever the fuck the hog calling was, Iowa or something.
I mean,
we're going to go to all the county fairs and compete. We'll take videos. You get to watch it, but it'll be on Patreon.
We're
going to
go on the county fair circuit.
There you go.
You're welcome.
And we'll post it on Patreon. So you got to be on Patreon. $1 a month. That's all it takes. Do it.
To fund our dreams.
Yes.
Our county fair dream.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.